Law Focus Podcast.
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Law Focus. My name is Millicent Ndiweni and I'm joined in studio by my colleague attorney.
My name is Tsapo Mohapi.
And together, we will be your voice of law for the evening right here on VAW FM 88.1. Tonight, we're going to discuss unfair dismissals in the workplace and the recourse of such unfair dismissals. Of course, we'll be looking at the legal intricacies, the ramifications, etc.
Rights and recourse.
Rights and recourse.
Yeah.
And to help us in this conversation, we will be joined by labor lawyer from Legal Aid South Africa, Ms. Jabulile Duba. And of course, we don't just look at the legal technicalities, we also look at the ethics and more of the human side to our discussions, and that's
the, the effect on the individual.
Absolutely.
Say,
so for that, we're going to get that analysis by Newo Matlhako, who is a staff member at the Wits Law Clinic, and he is responsible for student training and mitigation.
I think that'll be a very interesting conversation, because we're looking at it from two different sides and two slightly different points of view, and I think we could learn quite a bit tonight. Now, of course, this wouldn't be a conversation without your input, and if you wish to join the conversation, you can send us a tweet at VAWFM using the hashtag LawFocus. You can also send us a voice note on the WhatsApp number, which is 084-078-4912.
But of course, we cannot continue the conversation without first talking of the biggest, hottest legal stories of the weekend. This is our Legal Hotspots.
Law Focus on VAWFM 88.1. Point of information.
So we see that former President Jacob Zuma is back in court, the KZN High Court, for corruption, racketeering, and money laundering charges. You shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. We're back here 10 years later and we're still here.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's saying that this is just a propaganda agenda against him, unfortunately. And he's got a new attorneys and legal team, and there's nothing new really that they're going to say.
Well, you never know, but I mean, all of this sounds very, very, very familiar. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time throughout his presidency. It was hanging over his head, and again, he's going for the same type of argument that there is sort of unfair or illegitimate motives for.
Yeah, the ammunition is basically the same, and he's going to ask for a stay in prosecutions, meaning that the case must be completely taken off, struck out, and he must never be charged
prosecuted.
I mean,
that's what he's, but I mean, the charges are very serious, and there are numerous charges. So,
and considering also that the prosecutor in this case is the same prosecutor who got Shabir Sheikh convicted, I wonder whether Mr. Zuma will succeed.
Yeah, well, you never know. I mean, this is South Africa and every day is a new day, so we'll see what happens with that. But hey, good luck to him.
Drama.
Yeah, yeah. And the next, I think, is a public protector's report, and it's a damning finding on the public protector's report. So the High Court in Pretoria yesterday ruled that her work was basically inadequate. There was the Vrede Dairy Farm project. I think it's a 340 million rand project with about 80 to 100 beneficiaries, predominantly black beneficiaries. And when she published a report last year in February, she didn't come to very adverse findings with regard to the project. And the court has ruled that her report was basically highly inadequate. It didn't take into consideration many things such as the views, experiences, considerations of those beneficiaries, and considering that there are many, many, well, quite a few prominent people involved or implicated in this, it's a very damning finding.
Absolutely, and I mean, it's so much money that was supposed to serve a good purpose that it did not. I wonder if it's just poor work ethic on her side, whether it's negligence on her part, incompetence, perhaps even, I don't know.
You don't want to, well, I mean, you don't want to be unkind, but this is not the first time that the court has found really, really against the public prosecutor. And considering that this is public funds we're talking about, you would expect the report to be much more comprehensive and to take into account many, many more of the concerns that were raised
Absolutely.
In the complaint.
Absolutely. I mean, to go overseas now, we have new abortion laws in the states of Alabama, Ohio, Missouri, and Georgia in the United States. And this follows the U.S. Supreme Court decision that was made last week. So from now on, what this means is you can no longer, as a woman, have an abortion because you want to have an abortion. You can only have an abortion if you are a woman at risk. This seems like a rather archaic and retrogressive kind of decision that has been made by the courts, because in 1973 there was a case by Roe and Wade.
Roe versus Wade, yes,
exactly,
the US Supreme Court.
Where they obviously said abortions will now be constitutional.
Yes.
And now they have completely made a U-turn on that. It's so bad to the extent that even if, as a woman, you've been raped or you fell pregnant by incest, you cannot actually abort. And doctors who will help such women will face up to 99 years in jail. That's an entire century.
I mean, that's very interesting. I'm not sure that that will become, the way I understand it at the moment, is that that hasn't become the law in Alabama. However, I would be very, very surprised if the law was passed the way that it's proposed now. This is the position that most countries had, say, 50 or even 40 years ago. This was the position in many countries, where the only way a woman could get an abortion was if there was a risk to the health of the mother or the health of the
baby,
of the baby.
Fetus.
But I mean, it's America, and times are changing. We can see that conservative views are becoming far more popular, so you never know what will happen. But that's a very interesting development. The case of Roe versus Wade is even quoted in South African law. When our abortion laws changed, that was one of the cases that was mentioned. It's
that's
a really
precedence.
Groundbreaking case. So
Absolutely.
We'll see. We'll watch that closely and see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, you are tuned into Law Focus on VFM 88.1. Let us continue the show as we discuss dismissals in the workplace.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
All right, well, this is a very emotive and quite an important topic. So to help us to unpack it and discuss it, we've invited a guest who is a labor lawyer from Legal Aid South Africa. Her name is Ms. Jabulile Duba, and she is from Legal Aid South Africa. If we can get her on the line, we will as quickly. Perhaps we have to perhaps remember that, I mean, aside from your family and so on, your work is a big part of your life.
It's so, literally your dignity.
Yeah, you know, it's. I mean, you get up and every day, and you spend 8 or even more hours there, just to get by. So it's very important to understand what's going on with your work, what your rights are in the workplace, etc., you know.
And how dismissals really affect not just you as the individual, but the entire system, from your family to obviously your even colleagues who remain behind after you.
Yeah.
So hopefully our guest can help us unpack this further better.
All right, let's see if she's on the line. This is Ms. Jabulile Duba. Hello.
Hello.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm good, and you?
I'm okay. Welcome to
Law Focus.
Welcome to Law Focus. Thank you for spending a bit of time with us today. My name is Tsepo, and I want us to discuss the labor market and labor law in South Africa at the moment, because it's such an important topic. So many of our listeners won't always understand the intricacies or even some of the simple things that are involved in labor law and the work environment.
Yes.
Okay. So let's start right at the beginning. Please tell us, you know, what would you say the purpose of an employment contract is, and why is it so important to have one? I know the basic conditions do dictate that you should have a written one where possible, but why is it so important, and what's its purpose?
Well, Okay. It is important to have the employment contract, as it is a binding agreement, which entails the terms of the job offer from the employer to the potential employee. And it covers the terms and conditions of the relationship that will exist between the two parties.
Right, okay. So what's expected of you and as an employee, what the employer also is expected to do would be contained in that contract, eh?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now, let's move on to dismissals, because, I mean, that will be the you know, where things get difficult, where things can get a bit ugly. Can you tell us perhaps what the different types of dismissals are? I know there's sometimes to do with, retrenchment, and then there's other sorts of dismissals. So broadly speaking, what would you classify the different dismissals as?
Oh, okay. Dismissals, if I can explain it like this. The employer can dismiss you for a misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
They can also dismiss you for operational requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And also for incapacity or poor work performance.
All right, okay. So misconduct is misbehavior, and the second one, which was operational requirements, is with relates to retrenchment.
Retrenchment.
Okay,
yes.
And then the other one would be either where you are ill and you can't work anymore, or you're actually not capable of doing the work. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, no, that's good. Thanks. Now, when we speak of labor law and the rights surrounding labor law, you know, there are different categories of an employee. Some of them are contract-based, sometimes, you know, for a limited term contract. Some of them are permanent, some of them are part-time, some of them are seasonal.
Yes.
Does the labor law sort of apply to all of them, and do unfair dismissals in particular, does it apply to all of those categories or not?
Whether you are a permanent employee or a contract employee, when it comes to the issue of dismissals, mm-hmm. The Act, it applies equally.
Okay.
So if there is issue about the dismissals, it doesn't differentiate between those employees. The procedure that needs to be followed there, it must be followed equally to all the employees.
Okay, so I mean, regardless of whether you're a fixed term contract, a permanent, a part time, seasonal, when it comes to dismissal, the rules are more or less the same for everybody. Is that what you say?
Yes,
okay. Okay. No. Good. Now we have the code of good practice, which normally what we try to say is we should have a fair dismissal. And can you tell us what would make a dismissal unfair?
Okay.
In
terms of the practice, is that firstly, if let's say an employee has committed an act of misconduct in the workplace.
That's the common one. Yes.
Yes. The employer has to issue that employee with a notice to appear before a disciplinary inquiry.
Okay.
Yes. And the notice should be at least 48 hours before the date.
Okay.
And at the inquiry, the employee needs to be given the opportunity to present his case. He must also elect to be represented, or he can speak for himself. The inquiry, it should be before an independent chairperson, who will take a decision based on the evidence that is being presented by the employee and the employer.
Okay. So, I mean, when you talk about the notice and the 48 hours, as well as the ability to either be represented by somebody who's a fellow employee or to represent yourself, I suppose that's the procedural fairness part of it. Is that right?
It's the procedural.
That's the procedural. Now, let's move over to what they call substantive. Substantive means there must be a good reason.
Yes, substantive, that means that there must be a validly justifiable reason why the employer is dismissing you. So meaning that the employer should prove on the balance of probabilities that indeed the employee has committed that particular act of misconduct.
Okay, okay, good. Yes. And that's based on the evidence presented at the inquiry, eh?
Yes.
Yes, okay, all right, right. And okay, can an employer fire you summarily on the spot? You know,
yes.
Can they fire you summarily? So on the spot, they find you with your hands in the kitty, you're doing something wrong, it's obviously wrong. Can they fire you there and then?
No, they cannot.
Okay.
That would be procedurally unfair.
Even if substantively it's fair, it's still procedurally unfair.
They still have to, it's in terms of the law that the employer must follow the procedure.
Okay.
Yes.
I think before...
That you must be called into a disciplinary inquiry.
Jabulile, this is Millicent here, co-host to Tepo. In the event that the employer did dismiss you and it has been found by the investigation to have been unfair, what recourse does someone in the situation then have?
Okay. Firstly, the employer needs to do the investigation, and the investigation is an inquiry leading to whether the employee should be charged. So it means that the investigation, the employer should interview the employee's consent and also gather a documentary evidence. So then if it happens then that the employee is being dismissed without a proper reason, then the recourse that the employee they have is that you can go and declare a dispute either at the CCMA or a particular relevant bargaining council, depending on the sector which the employee is working.
Okay, makes sense.
So there's always recourse to the CCMA or the bargaining council if you feel as though you've been unfairly dismissed.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. Yes?
Okay, for a second. And that to refer those particular disputes, the employee should be aware that it has to be done within a period of 30 days. Because after that, then you have to make a condonation explaining why you didn't come within the specified period.
And that can complicate matters, I'm sure.
Yes.
Okay, yes. That's 30 days, not 30 working days, 30 days, eh?
It's 30 days.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been very insightful talking to you. We appreciate your time and your excellent input. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Good night.
I think that's interesting. I'm glad to hear, however, that all workers, whether you are part-time or contract worker, whatever sorts of work description you have, everyone is actually protected by the Labor Relations Act with, you know, in terms of the whole procedure for dismissals. I think that's really good. Sometimes we take it for granted.
Sometimes there's confusion around whether if I'm contract-based, I'm part-time, you know, all of that, or I'm just here for a short period of time that the law doesn't apply to me, the employer can treat me any way I like. And that's not the case.
No, absolutely.
I mean, you still
not.
Need to be treated in terms of disciplinary actions and dismissals. You still need to be treated like everybody else, regardless of what your contractual basis for being there is.
And those time frames that she mentioned are also very important. It's most of us don't know these things. If you're not in the legal field, you wouldn't really know that you have to, you know, within 48 hours, within 30 days.
Yes.
You don't know all that information. But I think what is important is to then know that we do have bodies such as the CCMA and other bargaining councils where, as a worker who has been unfairly dismissed, you can actually go there, lay your complaints, and put your evidence together so that you can get what is due to you.
Well, that's assuming that you have been unfairly dismissed, because there must still be a determination that you have in fact been unfairly dismissed. The mere fact that you refer a matter to the CCMA doesn't mean that you are unfairly dismissed. They'll make a decision about it.
Absolutely.
If your industry has a bargaining council, but you're not aware of it, you may refer to the CCMA anyway. If you do it within the 30 days, the CCMA will then take it out to the relevant bargaining council once they pick up that it is a bargaining council matter. So you shouldn't be afraid if you don't know what your bargaining council is, or if you belong to a bargaining council, refer to the CCMA anyway. And the CCMA, if they pick up that there's a bargaining council, will send it through to the bargaining council.
Absolutely. You are listening to Law Focus, and let us continue our conversation as we discuss unfair dismissals. Remember, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note on 084-078-4912.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Okay, I think now that we've spoken to Ms. Duba about the technical legalities, the more straightforward kind of answers to unfair dismissals, it's important that we obviously analyze. You know, the law is not immune to being questionable. The law, we do speak of ethics as well. We do have the human aspect, the sociological, philosophical kind of take on the issues that we do discuss here on Law Focus.
Yeah.
And to help us analyze these issues, we're going to be joined by a guest who is a staff member at the Wits Law Clinic, responsible for student training and litigation, and that is Mr. Neo Matlhako. Thank you so much for joining us here on Law Focus. So welcome.
Thank you, ma'am, for having me.
Good evening, sir.
Now, we do know that although we specifically address legalities of dismissals in the workplace, Mr. Matlhako, perhaps we can perhaps begin firstly with briefly analyzing the whole work system. The problem surely doesn't start when an employee is dismissed. Often we perceive the treatment of employers to be totally disregarded by salary payers. Is it simply because employers have money, therefore they have power and the will to exercise it as they choose?
Let me first again treat your listeners. The issue of dismissal and the issue of work relations is a very complex matter, particularly because work relations, as it stands, is a contested terrain. So at one hand, you have employees who are seeking more from the employer insofar as their salaries are concerned and seeking better working conditions. And on the other hand, you have an employer who wants to maximize profit with less production cost. And at the center of it all, again, you have the power struggle between the two, whereby one wants to prove to the other that I'm in charge, I'm the boss, and what I say must go. And the other having the power to say that at any time I can withhold my services and bring your institution at a standstill. So that dynamic that happens in the workplace relationship, especially in this tripartite relationship between employer and employee, as well as the trade union, is the one that first must be understood, as it's not as simple and straightforward as one would look from an outside.
Absolutely. Power relations are important. And I think in South Africa, we do try to have progressive laws and institutions that are aimed at protecting everyone's rights, including those of the employees. We esteem the right to dignity and equality. We have the labor laws that we have, which are accompanied by other supporting legislation, such as the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. We have the CCMA, you know, all these processes that basically are trying to uphold basic human rights. How effective do you think are these laws, these institutions and processes in protecting employees?
Yes, I'll speak from my position as a pro bono lawyer to say that from the humble corner that I occupy, I try by all means to ensure that I defend the little man and try to effect the positive changes that I can for that person whose rights are being disregarded by a bigger man. But I will not be naive to say that in the quest of doing that, I sometimes do not feel as if one is hard done by the processes of law, by the processes or by the legislations itself, being your labor relations, being your Employment Equity Act, in the basic conditions of employment act or even in the constitution. At some time, I come across clients who have good merits, who have solid merits, but who never know exactly what to do when the act that they are accused of happens. Mm. For argument's sake, you find or you come across clients who do not know about the issue of prescription, to the effect that even after 3 years, your matter prescribed. In the labor sphere, it's even worse because we have institutions such as CCMA, whereby one should, or bargaining council, whereby one eventually, when dismissal has been effected, must refer the matter within 30 days. Mm. And you find this person not knowing that, and only approaching to your institution after 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, when the matter has prescribed.
In a position, yes, and you are in a position whereby now you have to do a condemnation to this tribunals to say why this person's matter must be heard. But the reasoning for that person not bringing that matter within time period not being sound. So you are in that situation whereby at times you are torn apart. But being in the legal profession, one who have a belief in this in the system, even though at times doesn't speak effectively.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very
particular individuals.
Yes, I think that's a very important point that you have raised. But how do ordinary people get to have this information that is so empowering for them? Who is supposed to be the one making sure that this is information that is public knowledge for everyone, whether you're a domestic worker or whether you're a lawyer at a law firm, to actually have this knowledge so that you are actually able to take decisions that are for your own benefit as an employee?
Yes, let's maybe start by saying currently you are doing a great job in advancing that knowledge that these individuals need by having this type of a debate in your show. But legislative employees are employers are required to have these pieces of legislation somewhere in our workplaces, whereby employers will be advised about the rights that they have, maybe the piece of basic conditions of employment act, the Employment Equity Act, the Occupational Health and Safety Act, somewhere in the work premises. So for myself, I think this is the responsibility of not only the employers but the responsibilities of institutions as pro bono institutions and responsibilities of everyone, including law students who have who are members of community, who are aware of the existence of this particular right, and who are embedded with the responsibility of ensuring that these individuals or ordinary individuals within the society are exposed to these particular laws. So I would say it's a national responsibility. It's a responsibility of everyone. It's a responsibility of you having to have a conversation in a taxi when you are going home with other members or other people who are in the taxi to say that under these circumstances, this is what you must do. This is a conversation that at times, even after doing your offerings at church, there must be a part and parcel of discussions about how things work at the workplace, in order to dispense of this knowledge to everyone, because the situation that I've been exposed to is very worrisome, because you want to assist someone, but only to find out that this particular person only knew about your existence after 2 odd years, which at the time, there's nothing more that you can do to assist that particular person.
Yeah,
and that's true. Yeah, I mean, sometimes then you find yourself in a situation where you actually have been dismissed unfairly. What are the steps then that you can take moving forward, whether they want to go back to work or they want to be compensated? What are the remedies available?
Dismissal happens exactly because this is one thing also that listeners at home must understand. Immediately when an employer says to you the employment relationship has ended between you and I, dismissal start to kick in. Then you are dismissed as an employee. The law provides for 2 legs that the employer must abide with. That is the procedural aspect of the dismissal, to say that dismissal must accord to the procedure as outlined in the workplace policy or procedure that is outlined by the basic by the Labor Relations Act, particularly the Code of Good Practice, Schedule 8. That is, an employee must be notified of the offense that he has committed, be given a chance to respond to that offense, and have someone who is independent to adjudicate on that particular offense. And this speaks to the disciplinary hearing that will happen at the workplace.
Yeah.
But when the employee is aggrieved about the outcome of the chairperson at the workplace, that is not the end of the story. In my experience, I have came across the situation whereby, and realization that if the employer wants to get rid of you at the workplace, the employer will simply do that. It matters not whether the employer is obligated to abide to the law or what. The employer will get rid of the employee. But institutions or tribunals such as CCMA and Bargaining Council provide for a saving grace for these aggrieved employees, whereby their matters will be heard de novo. That means their matter will be heard afresh. But they have a time period. That is, they must refer this matter after exhausting the internal processes of the company within 30 days to Bargaining Council or to CCMA, within which, in that 30 days, the Bargaining Council or CCMA will furnish the employee or a aggrieved employee with a date for conciliation.
Mm.
Conciliation is the process whereby the commissioner at CCMA attempts to conciliate or bring the parties together in a quest of ensuring or ascertaining as to whether settlement cannot be reached. And in a process whereby conciliation does not is not successful, then the employee has got an obligation to refer the matter to arbitration. And that must be done within 90 days. So if the matter is being conciliated and conciliation was not successful, the commissioner will issue the employee with the certificate of non-resolution. So the certificate of non-resolution is a ticket that will ensure that the matter is set down again for arbitration. But that must be done within 90 days of conciliation.
Okay.
And the remedies that you have referred to is divided into two. So you have dismissal that are referred to as a normal dismissal. So you have been unfairly dismissed for this particular matter. The remedies that are kept, insofar as Labor Relations Act is concerned, is 12 months. So if you are successful at CCMA, the commissioner might grant you compensation that range between any amount to 12 months. So that will be the maximum. But you have another type of dismissal that is referred to as automatically unfair dismissal. So these are type of dismissal that are conducted or that happen as a result of infringement of the rights of the employees. So these matters are specifically outlined in your Section 187 of your Labor Relations Act. For argument's sake, if the employee is dismissed for joining union, for exercising any right, for pregnancy or reasons related to pregnancy, for making a protected disclosure in terms of the act and all such things. So if dismissal is found to have been automatically unfair, this is a type of a dismissal whereby compensation will be kept for 24 months. But there's a trick there again.
These
are matters that CCMA do not have jurisdiction to adjudicate on. So what does that mean? It therefore means that after conciliation stage and after the commissioner has issued an employee with the certificate or parties with the certificate of non-resolution, then the aggrieved person or the aggrieved party, which will be the employee then, must refer this matter to the labor court for adjudication, because simply CCMA does not have jurisdiction to adjudicate on this particular type of dismissal.
Mr. Masako, thank you for that. My name is Tsepo Mabe. I forgot to introduce myself a little bit earlier. I just want to take you back a little bit. I'm also an attorney and I do a fair bit of labor law. And now, when the matter's taken to the CCMA, in my experience, I still find that the odds are stacked very heavily against the employee. And I say that because the employee arrives there. Although, yes, the burden of proof is on the employer to prove that it was fair. That's the only benefit that the employee has. But when they actually arrive there, they must arrive there with a bundle, which they often don't have, of documentation. They must learn how to cross-examine. They must learn how to re-examine. They must do an examination in chief, things that the majority of our people don't know anything about. And often, and I'm not casting aspersions on commissioners, but they are sometimes not very useful or sympathetic. Sometimes even a language issue, you know, where something has to be translated from isiZulu to English because they arbitrate in English. That also becomes an issue there. In your experience, is the CCMA really fulfilling its mandate to the best of its abilities, given sometimes the real challenges that employees have, even in arbitrating a matter at the CCMA?
The important thing, and you raise valid points, and which are points that happen every time.
Mm.
And the fortunate part about our system is that the decision of the commissioner is not the word from the Bible.
Mm.
The decision of the commissioner stands to be reviewed in an instance whereby one party is aggrieved by it. And this is the beauty about our legislation and the beauty about our laws. But the important thing about these tribunals, and I'll come back to the issue of representation. The important things about these tribunals is they provide an opportunity to give or to provide judgments or arbitration awards that are groundbreaking. Why am I saying that? Let's look for argument's sake, the case of Asai versus Nusa.
Mm.
The issue of TES or temporary employment services would have not arrived at the apex court if it was not of the progressive decision of the commissioner of CCMA in adjudicating that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, yeah.
But as we have correctly pointed out, it is not to say that CCMA does not have flaws. Same as to say that the court of laws also do not have flaws, because they do have flaws, and lawyers time and again appeal the decisions of the court.
Mm.
So it does have the responsibility on CCMA is onerous, correctly so, because at that level, and considering the Labor Relations Act and why such tribunals are constituted, is to ensure that these individuals who do not have access to justice, or primarily is to dispense justice quickly and effectively and without any money.
Too much expense, yes.
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 And I agree with you there that at times, the issue of representation, the issue of language barrier play a role there.
Okay.
But here is the beauty again about the very same institution, because even though at conciliation stage lawyers are not allowed, but in arbitration there is an application that one can make for lawyers to be admitted. That is, if dismissal is squarely on the issue of misconduct.
Yes, or incapacity sometimes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And what I must commend about what has been groundbreaking about CCMA now has been introduction or allowance of candidate attorneys to also be allowed to represent employees at CCMA.
Yes.
Because this has effect of ensuring that justice is accessed, because at the law clinic you have myself and Mr. Alex Ney, it's two of us, and we have 60 employees coming in, and probably 10 wanting to be represented somewhere.
Mm.
But with previous rules, only admitted advocates and attorneys would have approached CCMA. But with the amended rules now, I can quickly instruct my candidate attorney to say, go and represent this particular employee at this particular tribunal. Specifically so to avert what we have said, to say that at CCMA, I know for the fact that my client will not know exactly what is an opening statement, even to say what is the relief that I seek.
He won't be able to
articulate. When you approach at CCMA, you want the compensation, restatement, or reemployment. All those things are foreign to this particular person.
Yes.
And much more guidance is required. But despite these challenges, there has been a move on the right direction, I must say.
Yeah. I think this is not a conversation that we can exhaust, but you have been very, very extensive, Mr. Matlhako.
It's very, very, very
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll call you again to continue, you know, to wrap up the conversation further. But thank you so much for joining
thank
us right here on Law Focus.
Much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VolFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
Okay. I think, you know, that was a very interesting conversation that we just had with Mr. Matlhako now about power relations and, you know, some of the processes that a lot of people don't know about. It's so unfair when you think about it, you know. But there is another side to it quickly before you step in there, Tepo, where we don't think about the people, the ex-colleagues whom you would have left in your workplace, the effect of someone being dismissed on them, on the whole organization, on the ethos of the workplace, the psychological effect of that. I think that's a very interesting angle that we should perhaps have a
look
take on.
Quickly. Yeah, I mean, in my daily work, I will represent a lot of employees, but on occasion there are employers as well. And I know for a fact that sometimes the purpose of a dismissal is specifically to show other employees what will happen to you should you commit a similar offense. And that's not always a bad thing. You'd need a measure of discipline at the workplace.
Spoken like a boss.
You need a measure of discipline at the workplace. And so, although our law encourages a very corrective approach to misbehavior, there are occasions on which the employer feels this is enough and I need to set an example. They then go through the whole disciplinary process and they will then dismiss the person for the specific purpose of stopping that type of behavior. Now, it sounds harsh, but I mean, I have employers who are clients who've lost a lot of money through certain behavior and they need to put a stop to it. And the only way they can do that comprehensively, immediately, is to effect a dismissal.
Yeah, that's
that
because
behavior.
Capitalism is all about money at the end of the day. And I mean, what power do workers actually really have, whether it's in trade unions, etc.? What power do workers really have? I think this is an interesting conversation that we can even have right now. Tweet us on at VowFM. Let's talk about at Law Focus. Let's talk about it. What power, if any, do workers have?
But remember that there are the bargaining councils that are available to you. The CCMA is available to you if you are unfairly dismissed. Okay. And it is a free process. You don't have to pay to go to the CCMA, unlike going to court, which is inevitably very, very expensive.
Absolutely.
The CCMA is expensive for most people, but compared to a court of law, it's relatively cheap. So there is some recourse that you can get. And if you're not certain about what to do, the best advice I can give to you is that if you have a labor issue, do not stand still. If you do nothing for a week, you've wasted a whole week. I mean, something happens to you today, tomorrow, get up, call the law clinic, even call an attorney quickly. Look him up in the phone. You might get lucky. He might give you the time of day and give you a little bit of advice over the phone. But he'll probably tell you to go to the CCMA.
Although I think even the CCM is not immune to being critiqued. You know, what Neville explained earlier here is that employees are acting as lawyers and advocates in the CCMA for themselves. You did say yourself, they don't know what an opening statement is. They don't know what cross-examination is.
Yes.
Sometimes there's a language barrier. You know, you got a certificate of non-resolution from the arbitration that was taking place in your workplace, and now here you are sitting in this big corporate organization with these judges or commissioners, and you're struggling to communicate your points across. How much justice really is there in that process?
Well, you know, like Mr. Matheko said, not every system has got its flaws. But where an employee is not represented at the CCMA, what the commissioner ordinarily is obliged to do, unlike in court. In court, a judge or a magistrate may not give legal advice to any party. But a commissioner doesn't have to be an attorney, hey? It's an ordinary man on the street who's trained to become a commissioner. So they could be from any background. They just get trained to become a commissioner. What they're obliged to do when a person is unrepresented is to explain the process very clearly to that individual because they're unrepresented. So they explain the process of conciliation and the consequences thereof. If it's not resolved, the certificate of resolution is issued to them. They should issue it immediately and give it into the person's hand, not wait and say it'll be sent to you. And that is also explained that you may apply for arbitration as well. And at arbitration, when arbitration happens, the commissioner, if the employee is unrepresented, the employee should explain to the commissioner should explain to the employee exactly what the process is. And where possible, the commissioner should even actually not assist, but to, for example, ask certain questions to clarify certain things that an employee may not know how to ask. Okay, because ultimately, the information being gleaned is for the commissioner to make a decision. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Hopefully. I mean, just to delve into this last little bit before we conclude our conversation tonight. Last week, we saw veteran sports anchor Robert Marawa, who tweeted that he got an SMS telling him, don't show up. That was basically the termination of his employment contract.
Yeah.
How fair is that, especially considering that you can't say it was poor performance? Okay, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Poor performance.
That's a real
assumption. Your health, you know, incapacity, incompetence, misconduct. But how fair is that, you know, the whole, I don't want you to come anymore, and I'm going to send it via email, via SMS, via via Facebook.
Something like that, yeah. Listen, that is cold as ice, that. I mean, it really is. But there isn't a prescribed method of informing an employee of the termination of their contract, okay? Now, that doesn't mean that somebody can be fired via email or a letter or whatever the case may be. They must still, like our two guests explained to us, there must be procedural fairness, there must still be substantive fairness, so there should be a hearing, everything that we've discussed tonight. But once the decision to dismiss somebody has been made, how that's communicated to the individual isn't prescribed. So it could be via an email to say, well, this is the outcome of your hearing. Please don't come into work. You are
explanation, Yana.
I mean, normally they would send you an explanation as to why you've been dismissed. But if they really don't want you there on the day, they can tell you, listen, please don't come in, and you'll get your letter later on. I don't know if Marawa has received the reasons why he was dismissed, and we don't know whether he was subjected to a hearing or not, and we don't know whether there was procedural fairness or not. That'll still develop.
Hopefully money can follow for the fact that I am now jobless on the spot.
So, I beg your pardon?
I was just saying that I hope that because your earning capacity is kind of like being taken away, you know, you can actually be compensated for that.
By?
I don't know. The worker was firing you. Who must compensate?
Oh, right. Okay. Well, often with the high-profile individuals like such as that, they're on a contract basis. And sometimes what the employer decides to do is to pay them out for the balance of the contract. But I mean, that still, like we discussed before, doesn't negate the need for procedural fairness, doesn't negate the need for substantive fairness. But how they communicate the fact that you're dismissed, that's the discretion of the employer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we did have an interesting topic tonight about unfair dismissals, and I think there's still much that we know can be said about this topic. Please do continue the conversation at Law Focus. Tweet whatever your thoughts are on the discussion that we've had, and we will meet with you again next week. So from our producer Simbarashe Honde, our technical producer Kutlwano Sirame, as well as our Law Focus researchers Nelka Mamade, Sisetu Zingelwa, Khaleletsang Khan, Tsepo Mohapi, and myself, Millicent Ndiweni. Thank you so much for tuning in to Law Focus tonight. Good night.
Thank you and good night.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus. Law Focus Podcast.